Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. After over 200 episodes, we are a top 1% podcast globally, thanks to you. So if you love listening to these conversations as much as I love bringing them to you, please take 30 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and review, or just go to the website ratethispodcast.com/influence and follow their super simple instructions. On with the show. My guest this week is Andrea Mitchell. Andrea is the president of Customer Contact Services. After 30 years in the contact center industry, she started out originally in college in a call center. And for 6 times now, her company has been named to the Inc. 5000 list. She's also a mom of 2, proudly in Minnesota. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Laura.
What's your fun fact?
So my fun fact is that I'm a rule breaker. And when I was in the Air Force, I was not good at following rules. I had actually had to learn it pretty well in basic training and got a lot of punishment. And in basic training, they send you to go cut the grass in Texas for punishment. So,
oh, doesn't that sound like fun?
Yeah, it's great.
You know, we learn some lessons the hard way, but in the end, if we leverage them right, they serve us well, apparently.
Yes.
Now, tell us, what is your 30-second elevator pitch? Tell us about the company.
So Customer Contact Services has been in business for over 51 years. It started out as a humble telephone answering service. And over the last 50 years, we've diversified our service offering to provide really nimble boutique type contact center services to companies of all sizes. Well, we focus in small business, but certainly offer these services to Fortune 500 as well.
I think we've all experienced one side or the other of that connection. So a very necessary service. What is the most important leadership communication lesson that you had to learn, and how did you learn it?
The most important communication lesson I had to learn was making sure that you understand who your audience is. Mm. You know, when I was promoted to president, I really treated my used to be peers and the person that took my job as mid-managers, like I was still in the director position. Mm. And I learned very quickly that I had to tailor my approach. I wasn't getting the results that the company needed. And so I realized that I needed to do something different. And part of it was how I was communicating to that team.
And what was the biggest difference?
I think the biggest difference was, you know, understanding where I was and where I went to, and then what my expectations were for the team and making sure that I communicated what those expectations were, I think, very directly to the team.
Was there a moment when you realized that?
I don't know if there was a moment. I think it was a culmination of moments. So over time, as you start to look at your KPIs and they're not performing where you want them to be, I looked at how the expectations were being delivered to the team and why it wasn't happening. And I realized it was because of what my delivery was and how I needed to change it.
That's such an important realization. A couple of things. You're absolutely right. I think it's inevitably the culmination of things where stuff stacks up until it hits that tipping point, that breaking point. But the ability to recognize where that moment was, what the relevance was, and what our role in it was. Because what's the expression that the leader is the chokehold on the development of any group? So we can say, but they're all doing this and they're all doing that. Okay, well, so what are you going to do about it? That's the challenge. You want to say, but it's not my fault. Well,
yeah.
But you turned it around.
You know, never would have considered myself a micromanager for sure, but certainly was more involved in the intimate day-to-day. And so remaining that involved intimately really hindered our team's ability to grow. So, you know, not being able to be involved in every single conversation was a hard lesson to learn. You know, pretty soon you're working 15-hour days and you're not accomplishing more. In fact, accomplishing less leads you down a path of something has to change.
Yeah, that's the tipping point, right? 15 hours a day and realizing you're accomplishing less. One would hope people put two and two together and recognize, okay, something here has got to give. And it sounds like you did that amazingly well. Now, everybody likes to take different personality tests, the DISC profile, the culture index profile, Myers-Briggs. Tell us about yours. What was the favorite for you and how did it influence your communication style and success with others on your team?
So we use culture index, happens to be my favorite, and I am a trailblazer. So I think one of the things that really resonated with me was my patience is very low. And understanding how that contributed to my team feeling a sense of urgency, but not feeling like everything was on fire was important for me to make sure that I was tailoring my approach to make sure that also my personality traits didn't negatively impact the team.
What do you like most about the Culture Index as a tool? How is it unique from all the others?
So there are 19 different personality profiles. I like that it looks at your autonomy and patience and your social interactions, not only on a personal level, but also as they relate to the position or job that you're doing. So I like that it looks at both sides of it and it provides insight in terms of coaching for a manager for a particular charge.
What about a time when you made the wrong call and had to fix it? Who did you approach first and what did you say?
That's
a big sigh. Okay, I'm bracing myself for this.
We had signed the largest customer that we had ever signed in the company history. And there's something called Erling in the contact center where, you know, you look at, you know, average handle time and number of calls and call arrival patterns to determine how many agents that you need. And I had made a grave error in this formula. And so instead of having 200 agents, we had probably 65.
Ooh.
And when the phones began to ring, it wasn't quite that big of a delta that we saw, but it was big enough that everyone knew what was happening. And I realized it when I was actually on a conference call with the client. And I was just this moment where all of a sudden my skin got real hot and I felt like I was going to pass out and had to take a minute or 12 minutes or I don't know, maybe
120 minutes. Yes.
Maybe an hour to kind of go in the bathroom and breathe for a little bit and figure out that, okay, we've got to attack this head on. And really at the end of the day, the challenge wasn't insurmountable. It was, okay, we don't have the number of agents we have today, but we need to have them on the phone. So what is it going to take to train them? And so this was on a Friday. On Saturday morning, I called the internal management team, our customers management team, including their owners and founders were in the meeting. And we basically, you know, said I had made a mistake, but we were committed to fixing it. And we wanted to partner with them to make sure that whatever we needed to do, we would do to make that happen. And we didn't have a call center the size that we needed to put 200 people. You know, so we had to go find space and then everything else that happened. And we did that in a matter of 3 weeks. So it was really tough, but the team was amazing. The team that I work with at CCS was just amazing. So while it was really difficult to tell the client and to tell my boss and to also tell my peers about what mistake was made, I shed a tear. I'm not going to lie. I shed some tears over it, but ultimately we were able to do what we needed to do. And it worked out in terms of having that customer. I think we had that customer for about 3 years. And so it was a good long-term customer that, you know, we built trust, yes. You know, by just coming in and throwing our cards on the table, it helped us build trust.
How did you start that conversation? You have to have that phone call. Whew. I mean, I can hear the phone ringing. I can imagine the person on the other end picking up and saying hello. And then what? Because that's when like your mouth opens and nothing comes out. So what came out? How do you even start that conversation?
I made a mistake.
Or have you just blanked out?
Yeah, I made a mistake and we have 65 agents and we need 200. And here's how I made the mistake. And let me show you the formula. And you know that, so the base just right out with it.
Rip the Band-Aid off.
Rip the Band-Aid off. That's the best way to explain it. Yep. And just rip the Band-Aid off.
While they weren't happy in the moment, I'm sure it sounds like they stuck with you. They collected themselves and you managed to turn it around. So that's quite the testament to the skills of both management, but also diplomacy and customer relations and all that kind of stuff.
It was hard for sure, but we did a lot of work on the other side of that to make that happen, but it was worth it.
That's a risk to be able to make that phone call. I mean, I don't know what else you would do, but the risk to saying, here's what else I'm going to do as well.
Absolutely. I mean, and we had to ask the client to stop the campaign because I don't have 150 agents that I could just bring to the table. It's going to take us a couple of weeks. We have to find the space, get the computers in the space, get the agents. So everyone in the entire organization was moving towards this date that we had promised the client, like we won't have them today, but we'll have them in, I don't remember if it was 2 or 3 weeks, but we made a monumental promise that day that we were able to keep. But by asking the client to delay or stop their campaign, they were risking themselves too. They had contracts in place that they were risking, and there were SLAs and penalties, but everybody was just thinking like, what's the end goal? How do we make this right?
Right.
And so I really appreciate the partnership, not only that we had internally, but we have with the client too, because they understood like, okay, what do we need to do to make this right? And they work with us. So it was a huge risk, but I think part of it was just laying it out and saying, you know, this is just an agent problem. This is not a technology problem. This is really, we just need more agents. That's all we need.
Yep.
It was a complex problem, but I think simplifying it also helped us kind of lay it out to the customer so that they believe, they trusted us. Okay,
right,
yeah,
right.
It's only people. That's all we need to bring to the table here is people. Once we have the people, it'll all be solved.
Of course, the risk is that problems that are simple by definition are not simple by solution. And to recognize, okay, we just need more people. Oh yeah, but A, we don't have them. B, they're not trained. C, we don't have the space for them, even if we did have them. And so now we need to have you, customer, also take on an additional risk, which is to delay. I can only imagine how many months or years the people had been building up to this launch on their end. So the ripple effect is huge. And so that makes the heart sit in the throat when you have to have those kinds of conversations. But kudos to you for figuring out how to make it work and to build that kind of relationship with them. I think that's terrific. Now, that was a challenge for you. Let's levy a challenge to our listeners. It's time for the Listener 24-Hour Influence Challenge. Tell us, how would you like to challenge our listeners today to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence?
So I'm going to call this the Vanilla Ice Cream Challenge, because vanilla ice cream, it's the most popular flavor mm-hmm. in the world, but some think of it as basic. It's a foundation. It truly is the foundation which a lot of very intricate ice cream flavors take hold.
Of course.
Cookie dough, chocolate raspberry. I mean, I'm pretty sure I could just go on for days speaking about the different types of ice cream. But my point is that vanilla is the basic. It's the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes once we get way past the foundation, we were talking earlier that the problem can be complex. You know, sometimes our solutions are complex. We take vanilla to a whole new level. And so the challenge is take something, a process, anything that you have complicated over the years and take it back to basics. So, you know, my example would be, I'd like to make a grilled cheese and a cup of tomato soup and as my nighttime snack, but now I've leveled it up. It's not just American cheese. It's Asiago and it has basil and all of these other things involved. You know, take it back to the basics. Sometimes if you take it back to basics, you can really see where you can go from there.
Yeah, following that KISS principle, right? The keep it simple, sweetheart. There's a lot of fun in A, of course, just making those kinds of nighttime snacks, no matter how you like to decorate them. But yeah, we do really tend to overcomplicate things. I mean, I wish I could say, gee, I don't know what you're talking about, Andrea. That's never been an issue for me, whether it's nighttime snack or otherwise. But it's taking stock of where we've utterly, even with good intentions at some point, gotten that snowball effect kicked in. And now we wonder why something is so complex. And it's like, oh, right, that was my fault. So just to strip it down, bare bones, plain vanilla ice cream. And here's the thing, once you figured it out, everybody, reward yourself with vanilla ice cream with any topics that you want to put on it, if not completely straightforward. So I love that challenge and the fact that it comes with a built-in reward mixed in with it. So what about a communication skill that you weren't born with and had to learn? How did you develop that skill?
So I had to develop tact. I'm, you know, very direct. And so I think one of the things that I do is sometimes people call me a little brash. I think it's because I want to just get to the point. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm impatient. And so that kind of leads to some of it is that I feel like everybody feels like me and they just want to get to the point, you know, maybe not put some niceties around it. So I had to develop that skill over many years of management and working with people, learning what not to do, having managers that, you know, work with me. And I thought to myself, gosh, I don't want to act like that. And then I kind of self-reflected and said, geez, that's exactly how I'm portraying myself. So I think understanding, listening with patience, and then being able to talk to people about what the expectation is and how to realign that and working with them to develop them. So it's not just about what we want or what I need. It's about me helping you get there.
I think one of the most common thoughts we have as people is, why don't you see things my way? Why don't you just tell me what I need to know and forego all the other things like that? So to be able to step back and say, okay, there's now maybe this person does need a little bit of redirecting, but that we all are surprised when someone doesn't think the way that we do. So having that self-reflection and that self-awareness is massively critical. Now, tell me about a time when you went to bat for someone else. Who did you speak to on their behalf, and why and how?
So when I started with CCS 12 years ago, there was a lot of, well, this is how we do things around here. And, you know, a lot of history and, you know, there might still be a little of that left, but, you know, a lot of people that had preconceived notions about what other people's skills and assets were to the organization. And there was an individual that had been with the company for a little while, and she was kind of pigeonholed into one role. And after working with her, I felt like she could do other things. And so I went to bat for her with some of my peers. You know, no, she can take on more. You know, we can trust her to do more. And here are the reasons why. And then I can show you how she's been an asset to the organization and how we can rely on her to do more. So I think it was understanding both sides, you know, because both perspectives came with history, and then figuring out how to bring both sides together so that the one side would see the value in the other and then be able to come together. So it took a little bit of, you know, not just one circumstance that I could point to and say, hey, you know, she did this and helped with this and kind of went outside of her box to do this. It took multiple iterations of this, but ultimately the value was seen by others in the organization. And so it worked out. And I have done this a couple of different times, been in a couple of different iterations, but this one was pretty interesting just because, you know, everybody comes to the table with the same history really in the company, but different versions of and different perspectives of how that history actually went down.
Yes, I can only imagine. I'm curious that she'd been pigeonholed in this one role or capacity. What do you think happens? Because this happens for so many people that they just get known as the person who does X, and it's a very kind of finite view of this person. What do you think she did to get stuck? Everybody, of course, there's internal, external, everybody else has their biases of sorts. But to the extent that we all have agency over our own reputation, that we all have to make some efforts to get known for what we want to get known for, what do you think she specifically, or people in general, tend to do that get them stuck in a reputation that's more limited than we'd like to be known for? And what can we do about it?
I think there are many things that we do. I think that sometimes we want to please others that we work with. And so sometimes that puts us in a place where we want to be seen for one thing, but then it might lead us down a different path. You know, one of the things that I've come to realize is that I believe everybody comes to work. Everybody wants to do a good job. Nobody comes to work and goes, yeah, I'm going to really mess this up today. People want to do well, and they want to be rewarded, and they want to be encouraged to do better. So I think that it's not that you're not good at the job or you're not right for the role. It's the role isn't right for you. And so I think that sometimes if you get pigeonholed, it might be because you started down the path of, you know, I'm going to get this role because I need it. But then, you know, if there are other opportunities, it shouldn't preclude you from going for those opportunities. And also up to us as leaders to look at someone and evaluate their skills and their will, and then also the job that we've asked them to do, and make sure that there's a match. And if there's not, then we have to then help people find the right role. And sometimes it's in our organizations and sometimes it's not. But I believe that everybody comes to work to do a good job, and it's up to us to find the right roles for them.
The role of the leader is about finding the best ways for your people to shine. What do they do best? Find a way to leverage that talent and make it work for the organization. It's interesting that you mentioned that a lot of times people may take a role, especially at a lower level, out of need. There's a job, it's available. Is it going to make me jump out of bed every day? No, but I could do it. It's fine. It pays the bills. But because it doesn't make us shine necessarily, people look for people who do shine when they're looking to give new opportunities. We like shiny people, so to speak. And so it brings us back to really why I asked that question at the beginning about tools like the DISC profile or the cultural index or those kinds of things. Because often when we, and I just had a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago on the show, Patrick Lencioni, who did the 5 dysfunctions of the team. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about his newer tool, which is the 6 types of working genius. Great little tool if you haven't taken it yet. Plug to Patrick's tool out there. But when you take those and you do them with your team, I've done them with my team to discuss and be like, oh, okay, so you actually like those. I always feel guilty giving you that particular task, or, oh, I thought you liked these kinds of things because you're good at it. And people say, yeah, I'm good at it. I've done it enough times. I better be good at it by now, but I'd really be happy never doing it again. Like you never think to otherwise have those conversations with people, if not for the catalyst of, okay, let's debrief our test results together as a quote unquote fun activity or just a team activity of some sort. So you just give a perfect example of why I keep asking people for different kinds of tests to show different kinds of things. And it's great that you had the vision of this person to be able to see that she had more inside and was able to bring greater value. And when, so it sounds like you did find a position for her and she moved into it. And what happened? Was it a happily ever after?
Yes, for the most part. Yeah, certainly there's growing pains.
There's learning curves. Sure, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But for the most part, yeah, it absolutely worked out well for the organization and the person. And I think that hearkening back to your statement about the different tools, you know, I think it's, we have to be insightful as leaders to understand that someone may be, you know, it's someone that's been in the role. It's, you know, going to look different than someone that's applying for a role. And you have to actually look at what their traits are and to determine that. And I think I'm certainly no expert at this, but sometimes you get an understanding for how someone, you know, how they came to the organization, maybe how there's been some bad blood mm-hmm. and how you can kind of get behind the veil and understand it, have a peek behind the curtain right. about what really caused that and figure that out. And it's something that, you know, you don't always get, right? Because if you've been in the organization for a while, you don't get the new perspective, right? Yep. And coming in new, I had the opportunity to have that perspective that you don't always get.
Yes. All right, everybody. So go back, take that culture index or whatever other tool you want and have some good conversations with your people. Almost last. Andrea, finish the sentence. I wish I was better at explaining what to whom.
I would say, I wish I was better explaining pay-per-click algorithms and SEO metrics to the board and to our senior team members. There's a lot that goes into that. And I don't understand it all myself, but certainly impressions and how Google changed their algorithms all the time. And then all of a sudden I have half the leads this week that I had last week. So yeah.
It's hard when things change that quickly and you're expected to produce numbers and it's like, well, yeah, but nobody told me that they were going to rip the rug out and this week and change the padlock entry code or something along those lines. I would imagine that gets complicated. Have they figured out at this point that it's one thing for a board that's new and has never dealt with pay-per-click or SEO conceptually, at least to be like, well, I don't understand what is this thing of which you speak. But if they're on the board, one would assume that they've become familiar with this concept over time. So what do you think it is that makes it perpetually challenging of a topic to explain?
Well, this is more of my ability than their ability, right? Okay. So this is more about me than them.
Okay.
Just because it's an ever-changing dynamic. And I think that, you know, understanding how certain words at certain times and that, you know, the cost per click and the how the bidding goes up. So I think it's more about me than it says about them. It's probably not overcomplicated, but when you get into algorithms and people sitting behind computers and doing bidding and wars and those kind of things, that's where it gets a little... It takes me down the path of saying, okay, how can we get more leads but not use pay-per-click and use another method?
I think you should have a powwow over ice cream, vanilla. Bring everybody vanilla ice cream and have some ice cream and a good brainstorming session, but to come up with great stuff from there. All right, last but not least, Andrea, tell me about a time when you had to laugh at yourself.
Oh gosh, you know, when I made that formula mistake.
Had the 67 people instead of 200, that exactly. mistake.
Okay. I mean, a couple of years later, I look back and laugh at myself because, you know, while it wasn't funny at the time, I certainly laugh at how, I mean, I took it personal, which I would today too, but, you know, just all of the things that we did in such a short amount of time was, it was comical because I shouldn't have made that mistake. So I think just being able to look back and go, okay, that was... definitely not funny at the time. Yeah. Kind of funny now how it all went down. I know I can look back on it and say, you know, it was funny how it went down.
Yes. It's that kind of ironic, eye rolling, head shaking chuckle of a laugh more than the belly laugh. But oh yeah, we have to be able to laugh at ourselves on those kinds of things. If nothing else in the roles that I end up taking on, whenever I have one of those gaffes, my brain just automatically pivots to, okay, I'm going to have to find a way to leverage this in a talk or on stage someplace or in an anecdote on my show or someplace else. I got to find a way to make lemonade out of this.
Absolutely. That's what I've been able to do. You know, it took me a while. I had to look back on it for a while. But yeah, that's definitely what I do is I look to it as, you know, like, hey, I understand you made that mistake. Let me tell you about a time I made a mistake.
Right. Exactly. You're not alone in case you're wondering. Yes. And look, that's exactly what you did here today. So thank you for sharing all of that with us. Now, how can people learn more about you and your company?
You can visit our website at yourccsteam.com. This is the best way to find out a little bit more about me and a lot more about CCS.
Terrific. And we will add the website to our show notes and all that kind of stuff. So we do encourage people to check it out. Andrea, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you, Dr. Laura. I so appreciate it. And I appreciate the conversation. It was great.
And to everybody else, thank you for tuning in. As always, be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode if you haven't done so yet. And of course, if you love the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and review, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or ratethispodcast.com/influence. We appreciate it very much. And finally, of course, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.